Hey friends, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your non-diet dietitian, trainer, and host Katie, and this is episode 303. This episode is coming from the vault a little bit. I recorded it quite a bit ago before I went on maternity leave. So at the time of this recording, at the time you're listening to this, I can't predict the future, but hopefully praying that I am soaking up all the time with our sweet baby boy. And so I pre-recorded some episodes so that you weren't stuck listening to me, myself, and I every single episode. And I know you're really going to enjoy today's guest because you just hear it in her voice, just her genuine positivity, her approach, her wisdom, and you're really going to enjoy it. So Jennifer McGurk is a registered dietitian nutritionist whose mission is to help her clients feel fabulous about food. Amen to that. She is the owner of Eat With Knowledge, which is a group private practice based in New York, and she leads a team of non-diet dietitians. So this woman knows what she's doing. She is also very passionate about empowering business owners feel fabulous about their business, and she started a second company, how awesome is that, in 2016 called Pursuing Private Practice to support other healthcare professionals. So she is truly esteemed, very admired in this industry. And what she does is she offers a membership program, different supervision groups, because as dietitians, it's really important that when you're in private practice, you don't always have the support of other dietitians around you. And so it's really important that we engage in what's called supervision, where it's almost like therapy, in a sense, therapy and guidance and mentorship for your practice. Because, you know, we work with people who've been through a lot when it comes to their relationship with food and fitness. And so it's really important that we have a trusted other professional in this field who maybe has more experience, who has more insight and can talk you through really some more complex cases to just make sure that you are, you know, doing the best for your clients. And it's just, it's a really great resource, really great tool. And so Jennifer provides that service to a lot of dietitians in this field, which is amazing. She is also the host of her own podcast, the Pursuing Private Practice podcast, where she shares the ups and downs of growing a business and features guests to share their own journeys. So we'll link to all the things that she's going to talk about today in the show notes. But again, you're really going to enjoy this episode, regardless of your dietitian or not. But we really talk about all the things you can accomplish, especially when it comes to not just your career, but we talk, you know, a little bit of motherhood and life and just the amazing things that can come when you can conquer that disordered relationship with food. And so I hope you enjoyed today's episode. As always, if you're listening, take a screenshot, tag us on social media at Fit Friends Happy Hour, at Katie Hake. We'll put Jennifer's handle in the show notes as well. And so we just would love to hear. And don't you worry about me. I'm doing great on maternity leave, and connect with me on the gram, because if I would see your little tags pop up, that would just make my day. All right, on to the show.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food and their bodies. I'll also share my experience working with clients in my private practice to help women find food freedom and body confidence. I'm on a mission to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears.
Jennifer, welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour. So happy to have you here.
Oh my gosh, I am thrilled. I'm so honored to be on your podcast. So thank you for having me.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you because you're a name in the space that is, you know, so highly regarded. And it's just so great. We hear all these names like in our little circle and little bit big circle, and you feel like you know the people already. And then when you actually, oh wait, face to face on Zoom, you're like, wait, no, we have not met. It's so good to meet you.
Hi, it's so good to meet you. So, I feel like I know you.
Yeah, I love it. The power of the internet. So why don't you start, let's just start by telling our audience a little bit about, you know, you yourself. And really what I want to hear is, what's your personal story with food and fitness?
Yes. Oh my gosh. And I honestly have a very good story. So I am excited to tell you all of this. So my food and fitness story actually began in college with my eating disorder. So I had never worked out a day in my life as a kid, was not into it. But lo and behold, when I started struggling with my relationship with food, I started to struggle with my relationship with body, started to struggle with my relationship with fitness. So I got quote unquote very into fitness in college, but I was working out all wrong, like with the knowledge that I know now. And I won't go into the certain behaviors that I was doing because I don't think that that's helpful for anybody, but just know I was doing probably the things that you are not supposed to be doing, taking care of your actual physical body. So with that in mind, I got, you know, very into fitness, but I recovered from my eating disorder at the same time learning, like, what does it mean to take care of my body? What does it mean to take care of my physical well-being? And how does fitness fit into my life? So I am very proud to say that, like, that was definitely a journey. But as I recovered from my eating disorder, you know, I developed a much healthier relationship with fitness. And I have three kids now, you know, build a business in between all of that too. So my time for fitness has actually gone down a lot since those early days. But I am very excited to tell you that I just got back into like more of a, like, I'm going to do this for fun and I'm going to have a goal. So I'm 38 years old and I just ran my first half marathon last month.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did it go? Was it fun? There's two types of people. They either like cross the finish line and like, that was amazing, I caught the bug, or they're like, glad I did it, but never going to do it again. So which are you?
Oh my gosh, I caught the bug. But I have to tell you, I did it with my friends. So I have a whole bunch of mom friends here where I live. And it was so funny because we just named our weekend anything for a girls' weekend, like running a marathon. But awesome. I did it in 3 hours. So I was really proud of myself. Like, I had to walk, obviously. I'm not, you know, I couldn't run the whole thing. I had to run, walk, but it felt so good to like almost come full circle. Like, I've been recovered for such a long time now, but I never had a fitness goal or anything like that, partly because I just have had kids and just not a lot of time. But it felt so good to have a fitness goal that felt like it was coming from a place of connection. And felt like it was coming from a place of just, I want to do this because I want to do this for me. And I want to have the training time to, you know, listen to music and challenge myself in a way that just feels so intuitive. So I feel like that was such like a gift to give myself last month.
I love that. Really feeling it for the sense of like accomplishment. And like you said, just connecting with my body, space for me, which I know for many of our listeners, they might not be able to relate to that or can think back to that time where they couldn't. So I'm curious to know a little bit more about what did recovery really look like for you?
Yes. Oh my gosh. So yes, now going back almost 18 years at this point, which is so crazy. But I think that first email that I sent to my very first therapist back when I was 22 years old was probably the most challenging thing I have ever done in my entire life. And I have done some pretty hard things, but that was the number one hardest moment, maybe, of my entire life. And I have seen many different therapists since then, but that first appointment, that first time reaching out for help, that first time saying, like, I don't know what is going on in my relationship with food, but something is going on with my relationship with food. I think that was the most pivotal moment of my life. So happy I did it. It was very, very hard, but I, you know, took that first step and went to my first therapy appointment when I was in New York City as working as a dietitian. I had just gotten my first job as a dietitian and just saying, like, something is wrong with my relationship with food.
Do you remember why was it so hard? Was it something that you noticed and you felt inclined to, or did you have like a loved one that kind of prompted you?
I will say this too. I was very good at hiding how much I was struggling. So that's another reason why I like to talk about my recovery story, because so many people feel so much shame. I know exactly what that feels like to be struggling so much with your relationship with food. And then to say, like, is there something wrong? Like, just to have this question of, is this really how I want to live my life? Is there something wrong? Like, I don't know. Because at the time, you know, and this was very, very early 2000s, diet culture was very much a thing. I am so happy to see that shift a little bit now in 2023, even though it is still very much a thing.
A little bit. So, some days it feels like a lot. And then other days you're like, a little.
Just a little. But at the time, like, you know, the habits, and again, I won't go into specifics, but the habits and the things that I was doing that was very disordered were praised from a lot of angles, and especially too as a dietitian. So I do think that it was very hard for me to receive that help, but that was hands down the thing that really changed my life.
Yeah. And that's such a theme, you know, we hear on this podcast. We've had so many dietitians and fitness professionals, and many women really relate to that. Yeah. This is praised, it's normalized. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it takes kind of that low point for a lot of us to really understand, like, why am I doing this? It doesn't have to be this way. Yeah. So what was kind of that next step for you? You know, you started to go to therapy, but like, how did you really discover intuitive eating, and how did that shift how you practice? Yes.
Well, I should say maybe that was actually the moment, although it didn't happen right away, but a friend of mine gave me the third version of intuitive eating, and I read it and I remember thinking, like, I don't eat like this. Like, what is this type of thing? Mm-hmm. So it didn't happen right away, but that maybe was my aha moment where I don't have to eat the way that I'm eating and be in relationship with my body and fitness. Like, I put fitness in quotes though, like fitness, mm-hmm. That I was. So yeah, I mean, I lived in the city for 3 years. So I had therapy for almost two of them. And it was really hard, like week after week, like challenging myself, going through the actual physical challenges, emotional challenges, mental challenges, so many of the different things. But I really do credit my therapist and the hard work that we did together for starting to get me on the path of recovery. And I don't want to say that I like fully recovered, period, never thought about anything after that, but I really was in recovery for another couple of years. And then I kind of finally felt myself shift into, like, I don't really need to think about this anymore, you know? So it was just such a long process, but it was so worth it.
Well, thank you for sharing that too, that, you know, this doesn't happen overnight. And I think for anybody listening who's maybe feeling that stuck of, I feel like I've been doing this work for so long and it's been, you know, such an up and down journey, just, you know, to hear you, like, yes, it takes time. However, the flip side of it is everything.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it does, like, the thing is too, whenever you go on a mental health journey, and you could argue that mental health is only one aspect of disordered eating. I think it's a big aspect of disordered eating. So it could be mental health. It could be diet culture. It could be something, you know, there's so many different reasons why people have disordered eating, but mental health sticks with you for a while. Like, if it's not coming out in food, fitness, behavior, it's coming out in another place, and it's going to shift and evolve and morph into something else. So you almost have to be learning how to manage mental health stuff rather than recovery, period. Never think about that stuff ever again. Even though I do consider myself fully recovered from my eating disorder, I still struggle with anxiety, and I am managing that. So that's how I see my situation, not obviously the same for everybody else, but that's how I see it.
No, that's a really great way to describe it. And, you know, we go through different seasons of life, and mm-hmm. therefore different seasons with food, with our body, with, yes. with movement, just like you mentioned, you know, having three kids, this looks totally different. Mm-hmm. Movement does then,
yeah,
you know, before, during, after.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And I will tell you too, the toughest times of my mental health have been postpartum. A lot of people think pregnancy, but it's really been the postpartum, and not the month after the baby comes. Usually it's like 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 months after each of my kids has been the time where I have struggled the most. So I also just want to put that out there, because there's so many people that, you know, struggle with so much stuff, and just hearing other people say, like, go get help, and it's okay to get help, and you deserve to get help, is really important to me. And that's part of my mission.
And why do you think that is, asking more as a 20-week pregnant woman as well? Like, so why be, but I asked because I had this conversation actually with a friend earlier who was saying, you know, it really took her, we were talking about business things, and she said, you know, it really took me like 5 months after having my baby. Like,
yeah,
she has a 4-month-old right now. And she's like, this is her fourth child. And she's like, really, it's been about month 5 to where I can then find my new groove. And so I'm curious, like, from your perspective, what is it about that time frame?
Yeah. Okay. So I think, again, this is sample size of one, but I don't think I'm alone in that. I feel like, first of all, and also too, I've learned a lot from my friends, Lindsay Senevic and Stephanie Reynolds. So I have to shout them out with this because I've been through like 5 pregnancies between all of us together ever since we've been really business best friends. And Lindsay's an expert in this space too. But I do think that when you are pregnant, you give yourself a ton of support. Like, I don't know if you want to shout out anything that you've done, but a lot of people go for massages. A lot of people, like, you know, say no to certain things because they are resting. A lot of times you are at the doctor's office and people are doing things for you and saying, what do you need? You know, you're not feeling guilty spending money on yourself. Like, maybe you're ordering Instacart and you're just giving yourself a lot more self-care because you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you're seeing doctors and healthcare professionals all the time. I mean, you have so many appointments. What happens when you give birth? You go through a traumatic event, no matter if you have a vaginal birth or a C-section. And I've had both, so it's traumatic no matter what it is. But basically, you go through a traumatic event and you see your doctor in the hospital and then you leave with no support, mm-hmm. nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, people, all you hear about is like getting your body back. You see your healthcare team 6 weeks after the fact, and then you are left alone to care for a human that, you know, first-time moms have never done before. You're not sleeping. You have a new identity. If you are a business owner, there's so many things happening like around you that you cannot necessarily control. So I feel like for me, that's the time where it just shifts the most. But I learned, at least with my third kid, that giving myself that extra support is so needed, so valuable. And to, like, I learned to be in therapy before there's a problem, to make sure that I have the support of my friends and family, to ask for help, to budget enough so I know, like, financially that I can cover this. So it really is something that I finally think I learned by the third kid.
Sure. I mean, I was also, another friend I was talking with today, actually another dietitian in the space, who she's much more pregnant than I am. I don't know exactly how far along she is, but, you know, just joking that, yeah, I'm trying, for me personally, you know, yeah. I'm excited to dig into this topic a little more, but I think many, you know, listeners can relate of just struggling to slow down.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation with her of, gosh, I'm really just trying to manage my expectations and, you know, ultimately, like, lower my expectations, recognizing yeah. that there's going to come a time, probably at some point in this pregnancy, but also after, you know, where I'm going to be, life is going to force me to slow down.
Yeah.
And I want to mentally get a handle on that now before it actually happens. Right. So in your experience, right, you work with a lot of women who are business owners, who are really passionate about their careers. First, before we go into that, can you explain a little bit more about kind of the different hats that you wear?
Yes. Well, so I have to say, eating disorder recovery started it all. So that is one thing that I have to give credit for. And it's so funny. I always hear Elise Rush in my head say, like, intuitive eating leads to intuitive living. I feel like we all say that, but it is so true. So recovery gave me the gift of knowing that I can do challenging things. It gave me the gift of learning how to work with myself, like, again, physically, mentally, spiritually, like, learning the inside of how I work, personality, everything. So at that point, I kind of went through a little bit of, like, do I even want to be a dietitian anymore? Because remember, I was like a weight-centric dietitian working in a way that I felt like was not necessarily triggering, but just I was not into it anymore. Like, once I found eating disorder recovery, I basically said, like, why do I have to help people do something that I think is really harmful? So I switched jobs and started a private practice. And my private practice journey, it could be a whole entire podcast in and of itself, but I will just say I started off slow, started off small, and just grew and grew and grew to the point where I went full time, hired some people, now have a group practice. So it wasn't Amazing. As easy as what I'm making it out to sound like, but I will just skip over that part of it just for the sake of the story. But with that being said, now I have a group private practice and we specialize in eating disorders. And it is so awesome to see the transformations that happen over there with our clients. And I teach other dietitians how to run private practices. So pursuing private practice is that part of my company. I do some business coaching. We have a business membership. So those are the hats that I wear. But again, it all goes back to eating disorder recovery. If I never did that, there would be no business. There would be no life. Like I would not have a life. So it really is going back to like doing the thing that is hardest to do. And that's the gift that eating disorder recovery really does give you.
That really does give me goosebumps when you say that, because I mean, I'm sure you've seen it as well, just in clients and you know, maybe friends or family. It's just, it's so painful when you see somebody going through a really tough or difficult relationship with food in their body and just knowing, being on this side, like, it can be so much better. You know, you don't have to live like that. So from your perspective and your experience, how does disordered eating hold women back?
Oh my gosh. Think about how much time we spend thinking about food and body and exercise when we are struggling with disordered eating. And again, I know it's a range. People with eating disorders, disordered eating, chronic dieting, there's a spectrum. But no matter where you fall on the spectrum, a large part of your day and energy is being spent thinking about food, body, fitness, all of that stuff. Usually it's a negative type of feeling, where you might be thinking some thoughts about certain things, acting on behaviors, you know, having emotions around it. And it is a large chunk of your energy. So it holds people back from truly living their life. We stay very disconnected in disordered eating. And when we eat intuitively, we have this connection with our bodies, with our brains, with our, you know, goals and like actually what, how we want to feel. Sometimes too, I always say like we have connection with pleasure, and it doesn't have to be like a weird like sex pleasure thing. It can just be like, what do you want out of life? And I think that that is so important for us to understand. So staying on the disordered eating, disconnected side takes up so much time and energy. And the connection side over here is really where life happens.
I want to dig in a little more into that disconnected side.
Like, yeah.
I'm curious if you see this with women that you work with, or even just, you know, just your observations of like, what does that actually look like? Like, how does that show up for people to where maybe they're in denial about their relationship with food or their body, or, you know, they've started to do some of the work. I know for me, I can think back to different points in my life where it was like, oh yeah, I'm better than I was, but there's still spaces. And it shows up a lot as a business owner, you know, especially in private practice, right? Because you're kind of faced with different things. So talk to us more about that disconnection.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to why the disconnect is happening. And there are so many reasons. You know, it could be because someone is seeking more control. It could be because someone feels like very numb and can't necessarily feel their feelings. It could be because of trauma. I mean, trauma-informed work is so important for everybody to have at least the basics down, because I feel like everybody has had trauma, whether it's major or micro. But it's just going back to that disconnect is ultimately somewhat protecting someone from feeling the negative. So I always say, like, use it as insight as to how that disconnect is serving you, and then to go heal whatever that thing might be. So with eating disorder specific things, I mean, it could be restriction, it could be binging, it could be purging. You know, there's different types of purging as well. Over-exercising. It could be even too, like, I find being very, you know, obsessive with certain things, like more orthorexia type of behaviors can happen. But also too, I mean, I see it too with different people being just so like, I can't think outside of this realm of what I need to do. So whatever that might look like for them, whether it's food, body, fitness, whatever it might be, just the inflexibility around it all.
I think it's really interesting, you know, for somebody listening to see if you can identify, you know, some of the parallels. Like, you know, I think about different hats I have to wear in business, and it's, you know, thinking outside the box and thinking creatively, and thinking back to a time where I was really rigid with food. And like, I'm curious if you can identify like how is that rigid thinking carrying over into other ways of your life? Because it's probably really hard to compartmentalize that.
Oh yeah. And I see it too with say we're talking about restriction. I see that happen in other parts of people's lives too. So people that might've had restrictions show up with their food, not feeling worthy enough to have this food, feeling scared to having this food, feeling like traumatized to have this food, feeling rejected if they have this food, you know, whatever that might be, that shows up with money. That shows up with visibility. That shows up with putting together a value offer for clients. You know, like I cannot tell you how many times we struggle with boundaries. You know, when we have disordered eating, sometimes we let other people walk all over us. Sometimes we let society walk all over us. Sometimes we just literally bow down to whoever we need to, right, to get through. But that shows up in business too. Shows up in every aspect of someone's life.
Mm-hmm. Business, work, relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. It makes so much sense. But, you know, I just think my guess, I have no statistic, you know, study of one in my brain of, I imagine that's so common among women who don't see the connection between how the relationship with food is really showing up in other aspects of life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's why therapy is so important in conjunction with working with a dietitian, because dietitians are going to help people so much with their relationship with food. And then I hope that work spills over into relationships with people, relationships with money, relationships with work, like you said, relationship with business. There's so many different aspects of someone's life. And going back almost full circle to the postpartum stuff, I feel like identity shifts happen every single point in your life where you have a life transition. And it almost becomes like disordered eating could be something that people fall back on because it feels familiar. And that's another reason too, to kind of think about how to move forward in your relationship with food, because your identity is going to shift and change as you shift and change.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I personally have been thinking about that and having conversations with dietitians and friends as well, of just, wow, I can't even imagine. Like I feel a certain way about being pregnant and, you know, I'm just going through this really like a transformation, I guess you could say. And I can't imagine how difficult this season would be. You know, I've had pregnant clients, but now being in this position, I can't even wrap my head around how difficult it probably is for some women to see their body change.
Yeah.
You know, or women who maybe have gotten a medical diagnosis or on medication where they know their body's changing and they see it happening, and just it's a lot. It's a lot to process.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. And that's why I feel like the more support we have, the better. You can never have too much support for anything, for life, for business, for, you know, recovery. It's just so important to give yourself that support. You are worthy of that support.
Mm. Amen. Amen. Let's talk about the connected side, right? You gave us some examples of like what it looks like, what it feels like to really live a disconnected life. What are things that you see? Like, how does a connected life show up, or an intuitive life? Like,
yes. I mean, the other side, about this all day. The other side. I mean, my gosh, it's like freedom. It's flexibility. It's being able to go out and not think about food. It's being able to eat what you want to eat and have satisfaction and receive that pleasure. It's being able to, you know, wake up and decide, like, do I want waffles and eggs? Do I want cereal? Do I want a smoothie? Like, what do I feel like? How do I feel? It's being able to go out. It's so funny. Like last night, I met some colleagues actually in the city, and we had appetizers and drinks, of course, and we were all having the best time. And we're like, where do we go for dinner? Do we stay here? Do we go out? Where do we go? And just being like, we're all so whatever we want to do. It's so amazing to have that type of relationship with food, you know, but it flows over again into the other aspects of your life, like being flexible and knowing how to connect with food and body, receiving that satisfaction goes into motherhood, goes into work, goes into friendships, you know? So it's almost like being able to stand up for your boundaries, to accept the worthiness, to receive the support, to connect with what you want. You just become such a stronger human being.
Mm-hmm. Can you give some specific examples, like for those categories, like motherhood, business, like friendships?
Yeah. I mean, motherhood for me, I feel like I could not survive having three children without eating disorder recovery, because I am telling you, I don't want to scare you, but like the flexibility aspect of being a mom, at least for my kids, is huge. There are sicknesses all the time. There are changes of plans all the time. There's behavior stuff with kids, but also too, like those are the negative things. Like there's the joy in being able to go out and eat ice cream with them at any point that you want. Hold on 1 second. One of them just walked in. I'm on a podcast. Okay. Hey, Dad.
Hold on.
Perfect example though, right? Like
honestly, okay, this is the perfect example.
His timing. Keep
this in the podcast if you want to, Katie. Because I feel like me at 22 years old, even though I did not have kids at that point, would have been like, oh my gosh, I just messed up. I can't believe I messed up. I can't believe that happened. Why? And now I'm like, you know what? Life happens. Let me just move on. Mm-hmm. So feel free to keep that in the podcast.
No, I absolutely 100% will.
I know. So it's just like the flexibility aspect and going with the flow and being able to shift your identity as a mom, because it is no longer just me as a human. Like I am literally taking care of these children. They are my kids. So being able to shift my identity into that person has also been really huge. Mm-hmm.
Versus just the health nut. I think that, you know, health nut or whatever, like that title is that, you know, when you're stuck specifically like an orthorexia that is often praised.
Yes. Oh, and I mean, I see this all the time in my own friend circle too. It's just, you know, a lot of times like, oh my gosh, like you just had a baby. How are you doing it all? Like the praise of just being able to do it all. Like I will tell you, I ask for support. I have my husband here. I have my babysitter here. They're taking care of my kids. And I don't feel guilty about this, because I also feel too, for them to see me have such a great relationship with work, it's actually very, very uplifting for me, because there have been times where, and again, in my own family, not necessarily my parents per se, but like my relatives and people I look up to just complaining about work all the time. Like, I can't believe this is happening at work. I can't believe this is happening at work. And I'm like, I think about my kids. I want them to have fun at work. I want them to go be amazing humans with awesome jobs, whether or not they're business owners or not, and just make a difference in their career. So that's why I love it so much. Modeling.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. So, you know, what tips do you have for the overachiever who doesn't know how to slow down? They don't know how to ask for support. Yeah. And, you know, even when it comes to eating, it's like, I can figure this out, or I should be able to figure this out because I don't have kids or whatever the reason is.
Yes. Why is that serving you? Why is the overachieving serving you? That's my question back. And seeing what you get from it. Now, I understand overachieving. I'm an Enneagram 3. Do you love the Enneagram?
I need to like read the book. It's been a minute. But I'm pretty sure I get them mixed up. I'm either a 3 or 7.
Ooh, well, I love all I of forget, the numbers like the wing, for whatever reason. The
wing, you know, you're like a 3-wing 7 or whatever it is. I'll have to confirm and verify.
Yes. So I am a strong 3. The Enneagram 3 is literally nicknamed the Achiever. Like the achieve part of that is like a big part of Enneagram 3. So I always ask myself, who am I doing this for? Why am I doing this? What am I going to get from this? Like, what's my return on investment? So if I want to do something just to do something, sometimes I have to like tell my brain that is serving a purpose. Why? And question that a little bit and say, can I get that from something else that I'm doing? So I think that achieving and overachieving is usually something that can be a distraction too for people. And I know this has been so true for me. So I'm calling myself out when I say this. It's like, oh, if I just pour myself into work, I can forget that this stuff over here is happening. I'm distracted by this. I'm so busy. I have that in quotes, like so busy doing this thing over here that I don't have time to do this. So trust me, I love to be busy. I love to achieve things, but there is a time and place for that. And I feel like seasons of your life is really important to recognize too. So having an overachieving season, what can you do to kind of come down from that and to really think like, okay, I'm going to rest, relax, rejuvenate, and then go back to an overachieving season if it's time, you know, when there's a time and place for that.
Recognizing and identifying the seasons and when it's time, when you need to shift. I love that.
Yes. Yes. One of the best things that also happened to me was that I hired a full-time executive assistant. And it is very hard to overachieve when someone else is looking out for you and your calendar and your email and your schedule. And I remember there was one time that I had to do something at like 10 o'clock at night, and my executive assistant comes in and she's like, I know that you did that and you shouldn't have done that. So it's almost like having a boundary.
how did you get that on your calendar? Yeah.
She's like, I see that you did that and that's like not really good. And I have to say, you don't have to, like, for those of you listening, you might be thinking, oh my gosh, full-time executive assistant. I'm nowhere close to that. It took me almost 12 years to hire my full-time executive assistant, but get yourself an accountability buddy, a business best friend, a person at work that can hold you accountable. I think when you say out loud and you share and you build that community, whether or not it's like a group of people or one person, when you have that vulnerability to share with someone else, like, I really need support just to help me do this one thing, it can be really, really powerful.
My friend and I were talking about this as well when we were on that topic of just slowing down and rest. And yeah, you know, why is it so hard to rest? She owns a podcast management business. And we were talking about, like, what are different structures, or to your point, boundaries that we can put into place? Like, we have different, you know, we have great boundaries in our life, but we need boundaries around rest and understanding, like, what actually recharges me. You know, does sitting on the couch and watching Real Housewives, like, that sounds, air quotes, like watching 3 episodes, 3 hours of TV, like, that should be recharging. But what I've realized and really gotten curious about is, like, no, that does not recharge me. That actually drains me watching the trash TV for too long. Maybe like one show, but 3 shows, I don't think it's doing it.
I would say it depends on the season of Real Housewives.
Depends on the day you ask me, I guess. But yeah.
So funny. But yeah, like, what feels good? And again, it goes back to the connection. What feels good for you in your body, your situation? And again, it is such a privilege to be able to connect. And at the same time, it's so needed for everybody. And even if they don't have the ability to do it just yet, like, say someone is really in full-blown eating disorder treatment, they're having a really hard time connecting. What's one thing that you could do to help see that connection a little bit, to lean into it? And even if you have to, you know, figure out what works for you, if it's not safe to do so, again, trauma-informed, what is one thing that you can do to move forward to something that you want to do for yourself?
And I think I just invite anybody listening to just get really curious about if there's aspects of your life that you feel like you're not achieving, or you feel like, why can't I just figure this out? Like, go back to your relationship with food and fitness and body. And maybe you've done work, but maybe there's more work to be done. And it's like, maybe that's the link, if you will, or the key.
Yeah. I think we're always learning, because again, we're always going to evolve as humans in our different stages of life. And I mean, I hope I'm not the same person 10 years from now. I hope that I've evolved so much. And I think that that's just really important too.
Yeah. Love that. So good. Well, Jennifer, this has been just so helpful. And I think so insightful for listeners. We wrap up all our shows by just asking and wanting to hear from you, what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
Yes. Well, I feel like I got an easy answer, because Tuesday night we were all together in the city, a lot of non-diet professionals, because a tech company hosted a happy hour dinner.
Was it Super Bowl?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I saw that and I had FOMO. I was like, oh, that looks so fun.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It was so much fun. So we were talking about how it was just so great to connect in person. So many of us are going to Fency in October 2023. So maybe, like, the futuristic part of me, October 2023 in Denver.
Let's put it out there. I applied to speak at that. And one of my besties, she's a dietitian, but she's also a physician's assistant. So she works primarily in the, you know, clinical type setting. And I was like, I'm signing you up for this with me, because she lives in Denver. So I'm like, yes, we have to go to this. So,
oh, fingers crossed. I hope you get it. That would be so awesome.
That's so funny that you were at the Super Bowl event, because I was listening to Weight Inclusive Innovators. And I've been on that podcast kick and listening to everything. And I feel like I was there, you know, when you listen to a podcast so much, you're like, yeah, I was there with Morgan. I know all about this event.
I love it so much. Oh, so fun. It was just so fun. So fun to see everybody. So
that totally makes sense now. Just that type of group and everybody being in such a positive space. What a rarity as well to be in such a positive space around food and to be out for dinner and drinks and let's do whatever.
I know. So fun.
Love it.
So that's the best thing that happened to me this week.
Jennifer, where can our audience connect with you if they want to learn more about your practice or the work that you do in business?
Yeah. So my practice is eatwithknowledge.com. We serve people in New York and New Jersey mostly, though. So we are medical nutrition therapy for eating disorder treatment. But then my main thing is pursuing private practice. So I do business coaching, business membership for dietitians, healthcare professionals that want to learn more about business. So that is pursuingprivatepractice.com.
Okay. That was what I was going to ask. Do you work specifically with dietitians? Do you work with...
Yes. It is a little bit of a pivot. What we are doing is we're taking 2023 to expand to other professions, but historically we have mostly worked with dietitians, but there have been a couple, like enough therapists have come to me asking for support that I'm like, I need to do this a little differently now. So we say non-diet professionals. So we really do focus on business education in a way that is inclusive, rooted in your values. I'm not going to give anyone scarcity tricks. You know, I do not teach business from the angle of like, you know, you have to do it this way. Cause again, it's intuitive. So how people want to learn about business through my lens is really like building a non-diet practice that makes a difference in the world, sticking up to your boundaries. That's how we do it with our clients. It's also how we do it in business.
Love it. So aligned and makes so much sense. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome, Katie. I can't wait to share this with my audience too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.